to me.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Today, we are going to do two things. One, we're going to address the outcry from so many millions of people concerning using the Golden Globe Awards last evening as a propaganda for giving all the attendants there the flu vaccine. And then we're going to have Gerald Salante on for the second half of our program to show us the upcoming trends that will be happening throughout the world this year. This is an original investigative report. It's entitled The Toxic Science of Flu Vaccines. It's from our scholar, executive producer Richard Gale, and myself. And it is published on the Progressive Radio Network's site, prn.fm, for you to download and to share. I do not blame the celebrities. I'm sure many were caught by surprise. And also, how many of those celebrities have a background in medical science? Are any of them physicians or nurses or public health advocates? I'm sure there are many people in Hollywood or the different communities around the country, including Atlanta and New York, that support, as I do, the motion picture industry. After all, I'm a multi-documentarian. I've made over 100 documentaries. And just this year, my latest documentaries have been accepted as finalists or won for Best Documentary, Best Director, Best Screenplay, and 114 international film festivals, some of the most prestigious in the world, including the Bali International Film Festival, representing the whole Middle East or Far East. So it's not as if I'm not acquainted with people in the community. And I believe they were caught by surprise. And they're also as equally capable of being influenced by propaganda as anyone else. Consider this. Virtually every television program dealing with medicine or doctors, every television or motion picture as well, dealing with medical themes, has had medical input. And almost all this comes through the medical industrial complex's group of preferred specialists, meaning they give you the insights. Now, they may be right, many of these, in procedures, what to do when someone comes into emergency room, what to do if you're operating, the kind of dynamic that goes on. And some is absolutely fiction. No different than the military industrial complex has been supporting pro-war propaganda films for as long as motion pictures have been made. In fact, think of the movies, and they were well-done movies, like Black Hawk Down. It was an excellent film, and it showed our misadventure under the Clinton administration in Mossadegh. In Africa, where we should not have been, and how many, I think it was 18 Americans were killed. But when you're looking at the film, you're thinking, where did they get all those Black Hawk helicopters? Where did they get all this ordnance? You're talking about tens of millions of dollars, actually hundreds of millions of dollars in equipment. And the benefit of that is you get that for free if you work with the Pentagon. So hence, every script from every agency goes through a special department, little-known department, and then they review them, see what their positions is, and then they offer advice. Suddenly, everything in that film has got an input from the Pentagon or the CIA or one of the departments. So it comes up pro us. So, little wonder then that when we see a film, we only see really one side of whatever it's portraying. We don't see the full truth. That is also why I'm sure many people in Hollywood believe that the flu vaccine was safe and effective and necessary because of all the people dying of the flu. That's simply backdrop to what I'm about to share with you. So that's why I'm not blaming the people in that room or in the larger community for simply rolling up their sleeve and saying yes. I believe it was an innocent and an honest error in judgment. They simply trusted. Now to the toxic science of flu vaccines. The 2017-18 flu season was not a good year for the CDC. Flu vaccination coverage rate was its lowest in almost a decade, and the vaccine itself had a very poor effective rate. The FDA commissioner, Scott Gottlieb, had to make a statement in September to this effect, quote, "Last year's flu vaccine was less protective than it had been in many previous years," end quote. Yet, again, the government will spend approximately $2 billion to purchase upwards of 160 million flu vaccine doses being manufactured by drug makers for the 2018 and 19 season. Now, if you take an honest look at this, if you're sitting on millions of flu shots to be administered and handicapped with the past history of flu vaccines' feeble viral protection, and more Americans realizing the vaccine is either a sham or something not to be bothered with, the CDC and the FDA are desperately pulling all of their stops to motivate people and their families to rush to their local Walmart or Costco or pharmacy to get inoculated. The Federal Health Agency's anguish in flu vaccine compliance may have reached a historical climax during last night's ridiculous spectacle at the Golden Globes Award ceremony. Approximately 19 million people viewed the television broadcast as two hosts ushered a troop of white-robed doctors into the theater to browse among the crowd of celebrities to give flu shots. It was a comedic display into the theater of the horrible, bad science, mixed with entertainment that would have made the father of modern advertising, Edward Bernays, and the Nazi mastermind of disinformation, Joseph Goebbels, proud. When we consider that many of the most admired people in the United States today are celebrities, it should not be a surprise that the CDC, and very likely the private vaccine makers as well, would make such a move. We have to wonder how much of our tax dollars were spent to orchestrate this charade. The entertainment industry, including our favorite actors and actresses, are not medical experts. I will restate that again. They have no background in medicine, nor is it likely that many of them are more knowledgeable about vaccines and health than the average American. Nevertheless, there's a certain culpability the Golden Globes organizers and sponsors must own, because what they have just touted to the public is a largely ineffective and unsafe product. And it is feasible to reason that the CDC negotiated the awards vaccine pageantry with a platform of misinformation, lies, and unequivocal deception, such as the seriousness of contracting an influenza infection. A New York Times piece in October parroted the CDC's claim that 80,000 Americans died from infection during the last flu season. Now, step back for a moment and ask yourself. The New York Times is considered the paper of record. Aside from the Times of London, it is considered the most respected newspaper, and it has unlimited access to the best medical advice anywhere in the world. It also has some outstanding reporters, real journalists, people who are more than capable of discerning the truth from propaganda. They've won more Pulitzer Prizes than any other publication. Now, how this number was manufactured is rather mind-boggling. After trying to find the statistics and evidence to derive this estimation. But let us be clear and unequivocal, and my information is fully documented, and I do not use the CDC as a reference, as it is a sham criminal organization, completely discredited. After all, this is the same organization that provided us with the Tuskegee experiment and thought nothing of having institutional racism to support a 40-year campaign to allow African Americans to go untreated for syphilis, and therefore extending that syphilis within the African American community by untold numbers. It could have reached into the multi-millions, because syphilis can be contracted without sex. It can be shared in sweat and saliva. It's very infectious. So this is the same organization that has withheld the main whistleblower at the CDC, Dr. William Thompson, testifying before Congress, though he was requested to do so, and tens of thousands of documents from inside the CDC revealed an overt conspiracy to hide from the world that the MMR vaccine, by their own internal investigation and research, increased the autism rate in African American boys 36 months and younger anywhere from 2,400 and up percent. Now think of how many young children, African American boys, now suffer from autism spectrum disorder because the same CDC is continuing to go unchallenged by Congress and unchallenged by the American media. And it's still held in such reverence that the New York Times would quote it. Hear the real truths on this. And you can share this with the New York Times. During the past flu seasons, the range of flu deaths would be anywhere from 3,900 and up to 36,000. But many years, the 36,000 figure became the CDC standard. In fact, this number rarely deviated from its website for over a decade. What accounted for the greater than 100% leap in mortalities? Is there any credibility that can be given to the 80,000 figure? Among these tens of thousands, only 172 were children. 20% of these children were vaccinated. This would have us believe that the vast majority of the so-called flu deaths were among young or adults and senior citizens, but the AARP reports that only about 15,500 senior citizens died during the last year's flu season. 80% of all flu deaths are among those 65 and older. Any higher schooler and do the math and discover that the CDC's figure is utterly fraudulent. There is no science whatsoever behind it. It is a lie, and shame on them. Rather, it is another government effort at fear-mongering. Moreover, there is another catch. Unlike the children's deaths from infectious disease, flu deaths in adults are not recognized as, quote, nationally notifiable conditions. This means physicians and hospitals are not required to report flu-related deaths. The CDC's list of nationally notifiable diseases like Zika virus infection, foodborne outbreaks such as salmonella and lead poisoning, but influenza infections are not listed. So why are they making such a deal of this? The CDC does not distinguish, and here's the most important message today. There is no distinction between someone dying of the flu and someone dying of pneumonia. Now, although the influenza virus is credited with being the main organism causing pneumonia, other infections, including the common cold and other respiratory viruses, of which there are many, can also develop into pneumonia. The CDC acknowledges this fact on its website. There are over 200 different viruses that display respiratory symptoms and are misdiagnosed for the flu. And unless a molecular assay or another test performed in specialized laboratories is done, there can be no accurate accounting of actual flu infection rates, and rarely are any of these diagnostic tests done. Instead, the standard diagnostic test used, if at all, is the very imprecise Rapid Influenza Diagnostic Test, or RIDT. But pneumonia is not necessary for the cause to be caused by a virus. According to the American Lung Association, bacterial pneumonia and pneumococcal pneumonia, a form of staphylococcus, affects 900,000 people annually. How many of the CDC's 80,000 viral deaths were actually caused by a bacteria? Other bacteria responsible for pneumonia include Staphylococcus aureus and Moravellus, and also the Klebsiella. These are just some. Among the elderly in hospitals and nursing homes, of which there are many, the superbug Klebsiella is rampant and recognized as one of the most infectious pathogens found in clinical settings. And pneumonal infections in hospitals are largely due to the Klebsiella, not influenza. And yet they're all the deaths are counted the same. Dr. Martin Meltzer, a CDC expert in health economics, has stated, quote, almost no one dies of the flu. Let me repeat that. This is the CDC expert, Dr. Martin Meltzer, quote, almost nobody dies of the flu, end quote. And, quote, deaths are associated with flu, but not necessarily caused by the flu. To date, there is only one gold standard clinical trial with flu vaccine that compares vaccinated versus unvaccinated, and it's not good news for the CDC and the vaccine makers. This Hong Kong-funded double-blind placebo-controlled study following the health conditions of vaccinated and unvaccinated children between the ages of 6 and 15 for 272 days. The trial concluded the flu vaccine holds no health benefits. I repeat, no health benefits. In fact, those vaccinated with the flu virus were observed to have a 550% higher risk of contracting non-flu virus respiratory infections. Among the vaccinated children, there were 116 flu cases compared to 88 among the unvaccinated. There were 487 other non-influenza virus infections, including rhinovirus, Coxsackie virus, echovirus, and others. Among the vaccinated versus 88 with the unvaccinated. This single study alone poses a scientifically sound warning and rationale for avoiding the flu vaccine. And yet, where did you hear about this? Did you read this in the New York Times, the CNN, the dancing clowns there? No, you did not. And you will not. But it's the truth, and we document. We're scholars. They're not. At their best, flu vaccines remain around 50 to 60% effective according to official health statistics. However, the World Health Organization's predictions of the 2014-15 flu strains was completely wrong. The match was such a failure that CDC was forced to warn the American public the vaccine was only, quote, 23% effective. The 2017-18 seasonal vaccine was another bomb. Although the CDC claimed the vaccine was 40% effective, an independent study at Rice University in Houston determined that only 19% of efficacy, and they estimated a 20% efficacy for the prior season. Given the frequent ineffectiveness of seasonal flu vaccines, especially for the 65-year-old age-plus group, predictive methodologies to determine which flu strains emerge during any given influenza season have more in common with medieval divination than sound science. And remember, here's the final arbiter of stupidity. If I gave everyone listening right now 1,000 milligrams a day of vitamin C, and at the end of a year, you do not catch a cold, you do not end up with a flu, I could not, on any level whatsoever, say, even to suggest that the vitamin C you were taking stopped or prevented the cold. because there's so many other variables. Then why is it that anyone receiving the flu vaccine, if they don't get the flu, 100% of the credit goes to the flu vaccine instead of vitamin D and vitamin C and a healthy diet and exercise and stress management and keeping hydrated and sleeping right? These also keep the immune system strong. And that's how bad their science is. However, another less discussed finding about dismal flu vaccine efficacy was determined at Kaiser Permanente, Northern California last year, reviewing 45,000 medical records of patients tested positive for influenza. Researchers charted a trend that indicates that, quote, the risk of contracting the flu climbs about 16% for every 28 days after vaccination. Therefore, if the particular season's vaccine is a dud to begin with, immune protection could potentially wane within a month in some patients, end quote. In 2016, the live flu virus flu mist vaccine had to be pulled after it was found to be only 3% effective, according to an NBC report. However, the real truth behind its withdrawal is likely more crucial. The vaccine was contributing to more flu cases, infections, than it was preventing. And this is a fundamental flaw with all live vaccines, and even killed attenuated ones. They have been shown to shed out of the nose, out of our lungs, and infect people in contact with the vaccinated persons, especially those with compromised immune systems. Regardless of flu mist's poor record, we find it again back on the CDC's flu vaccine list for this season. Remember, if your child is vaccinated with a flu mist and goes to school, that's shedding out of his body for the next 2 to 3 weeks. Now just imagine how many times in a day a child rubs their nose and then touches a doorknob, touches a desktop, touches a pencil, a laptop, and therefore spreading the virus. The same is true for adults. Dr. David Brownstein has noted that as far back as 1999, the Journal of the American Medical Association reported increased risk of febrile disorders greater than placebo associated with live vaccine. According to the FDA's literature on flu mist, the vaccine was not studied for immunocompromised individuals, yet is still administered to immunocompromised individuals. Did anyone last night at the Golden Globe Awards ask anyone there, are you pregnant? Do you have a compromised immune system? Do you have arthritis, lupus? Do you have gout? Do you have anything that would overstimulate the immune system? Therefore, they should have been excluded. But no, that's what happens. And has been associated with acute allergic reactions, asthma, and a high rate of hospitalizations among children under 24 months, largely due to upper respiratory tract infections. Other adverse effects include pericarditis, congenital and genetic disorders, mitochondrial encephalomyopathy, and Lee syndrome, meningitis, and others. Now, were you given a menu to show you all the side effects, all the toxicants that are in the vaccine, from peer-reviewed literature from toxicology journals published on PubMed? They're there. And there's a lot of them. We're talking about thousands of studies. Would you have taken it if you knew that it had such low efficacy, that it had so many toxic ingredients, and what its side effects could be, and especially if you had a compromised immune system? And yet, when has the CDC ever been truthful with the public? In a later study by Dr. Dantia Snonarowski in Canada, individuals with a history of receiving consecutive seasonal flu shots over several years had an increased risk of becoming infected with the H1N1 swine flu. The scientist commented on his findings that, quote, policymakers have not yet had a chance to fully digest them. The study's conclusions or understood the implications. He continued, "Who knows, frankly? The wise man knows he knows nothing when it comes to influenza, so you always have to be cautious in speculating," end quote. But there is no caution by your local physician, pediatrician, or nurse, or pharmacist. Everyone agrees, don't challenge the vaccines. Not the flu vaccine, not any vaccine, not individually or collectively. Not if, as Paul Offit said, you could take 10,000 or 100,000 vaccines safely. No one challenges this. There's strong evidence suggesting that all vaccine clinical trials carried out by manufacturers fall short of demonstrating vaccine efficacy accurately. And when they're shown to be efficacious, it is frequently in the short term and offer only partial or temporary protection, according to an article in the peer-reviewed Journal of Infectious Diseases. The only way to evaluate vaccines is to scrutinize the epidemiological data obtained from real-life conditions. In other words, researchers simply cannot or will not adequately test a vaccine's effectiveness and immunological value, noting that there are approximately 200 distinct viruses that are misdiagnosed as influenza and produce flu-like symptoms. These organisms don't magically appear during fall and winter. They are always with us. Nevertheless, we are more susceptible to flu-like infections during the colder months when there are less daylight hours. Now, the Cochrane Collaboration, the world's foremost group of unbiased researchers and physicians and scientists, has performed a series of meta-analysis on the effectiveness of the influenza vaccine. They found that vaccinating adults against influenza did not affect the number of people hospitalized or decreased lost work. The Cochrane researchers stated that their results might be overly optimistic due to the fact that 24 out of 90 studies were funded by the vaccine manufacturers, which tend to produce results favorable to their vaccine. According to Dr. Tom Jefferson at the Cochrane Collaboration, it makes little sense to keep vaccinating against seasonal influenza based upon the evidence. Jefferson has also endorsed more cost-effective and more scientifically proven means of immunizing and people and minimizing the transmission of flu, including regular hand washing, wearing masks. There is also substantial peer-reviewed literature supporting vitamin D. Dr. Jefferson's conclusions are backed by an article by Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine scientist Dr. Peter Doshi, published in the British Journal of Medicine. In this article, Doshi questions the flu vaccine paradigm, stating, quote, "And this is one of the smartest scientists in the world. Closer examination of influenza vaccine policy shows that although proponents employ the rhetoric of science, the studies underlying the policy are often low quality and do not substantiate official claims. The vaccine might be less beneficial and less safe than has been claimed, and the threat of influenza appears overstated," end quote. The CDC currently recommends that elderly Americans receive a flu shot, stating that, quote, "Vaccination is especially important for people 65 years and older because they are at high risk of complications from the flu," end quote. Unfortunately, this warning is grossly unfounded. A significant body of research proves that receiving the flu shot does not reduce death rates among seniors. One particular compelling study was carried out by scientists at the Federal National Institutes of Health and published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Not only did the study indicate that the flu vaccine did nothing to prevent deaths from influenza among seniors, but the flu death rates increased at a greater percentage of seniors receiving the flu shot. So the more seniors got the flu vaccine, the more died of the flu. After the release of the study, investigative journalist Cheryl Atkinson covered the findings in a CDC news segment. Atkinson interviewed the only co-author of the study who was not affiliated with the National Institute of Health, Dr. Tom Reichert, who stated that the research team revisited the data several times, but that no matter how they analyze it, quote, the incendiary material, the conclusions was clear. The flu vaccines don't improve death rates in the elderly population. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny reviewed the Cochrane data reviews on the flu vaccine efficacy in a review of 51 studies involving 294,000 children. There was, quote, no evidence that injecting children 6 to 24 months of age with the flu shot was any more effective than a placebo. In children over 2 years of age, flu vaccine's efficacy rate was 33% of the time preventing flu. In children with asthma, inactivated flu vaccine did not prevent influenza-related hospitalizations in children. The database shows that children who received the flu vaccine were at a higher risk of hospitalization than children who did not receive the vaccine. In a separate study involving 400 children with asthma receiving a flu vaccine and 400 who did not get the flu vaccine, there was zero difference in the number of clinic emergencies and the visits and hospitalizations during the two groups. In 64 separate studies involving 66,000 adults, quote, vaccination of healthy adults only reduced risk of influenza by 6% and reduced the number of missed work days by less than a half to one day. There was change in the number of hospitalizations compared to the non-vaccinated. In further studies of elderly adults residing in nursing homes over the course of several flu seasons, flu vaccinations were insignificant for preventing infection. And during every annual quarter, the CDC's Advisory Commission on Childhood Vaccines meets, and the Department of Justice releases its reports on settlements made for vaccine injuries and deaths. In recent years, the flu vaccine was number one. During its most recent release, 85 of the 116 cases and two of the three deaths settled were from the vaccine court were the flu vaccines. So what we're dealing with is for almost a decade, the CDC has known influenza vaccines are ineffective and life-threatening for the elderly, but continues to market them without hesitation. Hence, five senior citizens at an assisted living facility in Dacula, Georgia, died within a week after residents were vaccinated. During the previous year's flu trials, Santa Fe Pasteur's flu zone killed 23 elderly participants during the vaccine's trial. Nevertheless, the vaccine was approved and continues to be marketed towards senior citizens. So I have a question. We should be concerned about any deaths, even one. What does it say about us, the CDC and the FDA, when one vaccine killed 23 participants in just one trial and they greenlight it? That shows you who's in control of the CDC and the FDA on its policies concerning vaccines and the dominant members who advised on these vaccines coming from the very industries that benefit from a thumbs up. Also, I believe that if the new members of Congress, especially from the House, if you want an important project, just one, lobby to have all of the exemptions that now protect the vaccine industry so that you can't sue them. If every American that took a vaccine died, you still couldn't sue them. Take away this indemnification. It was given politically, and it should be taken away politically because it does not serve the needs of the public. Then watch how few vaccines are given and then how the science supporting them changes, because then they're liable. And we've given a free pass to make tens of billions of dollars a year while the public suffers. I'm Gary Null. Our full article will be posted later today on PRN.fm. We're going to take a break and come back with our guest, Gerald Salante. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you to this program, letting you know that this week, the Jimmy Dore Show appears on Thursdays at 6 p.m., the Corbett Report, Friday at 7 p.m., and we have a new voice line for any program on PRN, and that is that this new feature will allow you to call in and leave a voicemail question to any of your favorite hosts. All you have to do is call the number, say your name, what show, and what your question is. This will allow your voice to be heard on your favorite PRN show and will allow a better host-listener connection. So here's the number. You can ask your question and then which host that you want this to go to, and then they'll have that and they can play your voicemail and then answer it. 862-800-6805. Again, 862-800-6805. That's our new voice line. Now let's go over to our guest standing by, Gerald Salante. Gerald's
Hello,
up in
Gary.
Rhinebeck. Hi, Gerald. Gerald does a program every Wednesday preceding mine on PRN, but he is well known as one of today's, in the last 35 years, as a trendsetter. He knows what's going to happen. He discusses it in detail. He consults with experts around the world, and therefore he looks at the world and all the different events that are occurring. And he does a show called Trends This Week, every week. And he has the Trends Journal, and his website is trendsresearch.com. Once a year, we like to do an extended interview with you because we want to see what you believe is going to be happening in the world. And now that we're seeing some volatility. I don't know if you could call it a correction or a manipulation, but there's something happening in the market. So with the equity market, could you first take a look and see where do you see it at now and what do you see the likely occurrence in the future? And why is this important to people? I don't know in any stock. But if you're retired, what do you want to bet that your union or the pension plan that you have is heavily invested in some of these volatile stocks? So if they make the wrong bet, don't get out of the market at the right time, you could end up having your pension substantially reduced. So take it from there, Gerald.
Well, first of all, 90% of the stocks are owned by 10% of the population. And that 10% owns, on average, about $350,000 worth of stocks. The other 10% that's owned by the other 90% of us, they only have, on average, of about $15,000 worth of equities. We, on September 19th, matter of fact, it was the day that I came back on Progressive Radio Network to do Trends This Week, we sent our subscribers a trend alert warning of an economic 9/11. And that was 2 days before the S&P 500 peaked. It peaked on September 21st. All this talk you're hearing about trade wars and tariffs is nothing more than stupidity, because there's nothing about it that's grounded in fact. Because here's the fact. All of Trump's tariffs on China, if they were to go into effect fully this year, would hurt the Chinese GDP to the grand total of 0.7%. That's nothing. What's bringing down the markets is quantitative tightening, which is the opposite of quantitative easing. And that's why we made that forecast. Back in September, the Fed chairman, Jerome Powell, said that they were going to raise interest rates 3 to 4 times this year. And what did we hear this past Friday? Quote from him, "We're listening sensitively," not great language, "listening sensitively to the message markets are sending." Well, since when is the Fed supposed to be listening to the equity markets? It's supposed to have a bigger role than that. That's why you're seeing the markets go back up. And let's put this back into context. We've heard Trump going after the Fed now for quite some time, calling them crazy, telling them that they shouldn't be raising interest rates, and that they're destroying the economy. Well, Trump just stopped the economic 9/11 temporarily, and Trump just trumped Powell, because Powell just did a 180 on where they were going to go. And so that's what's juicing the markets right now temporarily. But there's a global slowdown. Again, these are the facts. All of the propaganda you're hearing from Apple about why they're losing sales in China has nothing to do with trade wars, and of course it does have to do to some extent with the slowdown in China, because the slowdown in China is real. Their last quarter retail numbers, November's retail numbers, were the worst in 15 years. The last quarter GDP was the worst since the panic of 08. Now, going back to what else Tim Cook from Apple said, he's blaming it on the trade wars. The simple reason why Apple sales are failing in China is because Huawei, which is now bigger than Apple, is eating up their market share with much cheaper and more innovative product. Period. Paragraph. But so now what we have, the Federal Reserve, which is an illegal organization to begin with, Woodrow Wilson created, let these banksters take over the nation in 1913, and since that time we've lost over 97% of our dollar's value. And that was a major issue, by the way, throughout the 1800s for the Federal Reserve, a private bank, not to take over the banking system of America. This is an illegal organization. They are manipulating the markets totally in favor of Wall Street. When you look at all the facts from the panic of 08 to now, wages for Americans have actually declined. They haven't stagnated when you put in real inflation numbers into it. So going back to where the economy is going and why it's going to affect everybody, we're going to have a meltdown that was much worse than the panic of 08 when the $250 trillion debt bubble that the banks around the world have blown up, that they only could keep going, as Federal Reserve Chairman Powell is now doing, and that is pumping more monetary methadone into the bull.
I appreciate that insight. Now let's look at three areas, one after the other. My research, Richard Gill and I ourselves, we spent months looking at every country, every major country's gross domestic product versus their debt. And like in the United States, we looked at corporate debt, personal debt, the mortgage debt, student debt, if they had student loans. Some countries don't. And we added it all up, and we found that there is more debt in the world than there is assets, and as a result, or liquidity. So the world is bankrupt. And major corporations are floating on debt, though they have high value, and people can't understand that. How can a company be trading at 30 times its earnings when a lot of what it earns is supporting servicing its debt, which is huge? No one's looking at the debt side of what companies owe, and banks don't have the money, so they just create it out of thin air, and they don't have anything backing it up. Where does this lead us? Tell us the truth, as only you can, about how bad is the situation around the world. Just take us around the world now.
Okay, let's go around the world. We were talking about China. Their debt-to-GDP ratio is around 300. Back in the 1970s, America's used to be in the 40s. Now we're approaching 100. You take China's debt. When Bill Clinton allowed China to come into the World Trade Organization, going back to that time, their total debt was around $900 billion. Today, their total debt is over $30 trillion. As I mentioned, the Chinese economy, by the numbers, is going backwards. So what are they doing now? They're lowering the reserve requirements of banks. In other words, the banks are already in trouble, and now they're saying, loan out more money, even though you're in trouble, and we're lowering the standards so you could loan out more. You mentioned banks again. Let's take a look at the banking system in Europe. Deutsche Bank, the great German bank, last year, its shares dropped 58%. Overall, European bank stocks are down more than 25%. You want to talk about, you know, Gary, you're a great guy. I love being with you. You're wonderful. All the great things you do. I got a 10-year bond I'd like you to buy. And in 10 years, when you cash it in, because you're such a wonderful person and all those great things you do for society, I'm going to give you less money than you bought the bond for. Call me the Japanese government. You can't make this crap up. They're putting out 10-year bonds with negative yields. Who's buying them up? Oh, the banksters. That's right. The Japanese central bank is over $5 trillion in debt, bigger than the Japanese GDP. The Japanese banks are buying up all of these negative bonds, as have the European Central Bank, and they're deep in debt. The European Central Bank, you know, you're a great corporation. I really like you guys. You give me a lot of money, so here's what I'm going to do. We're going to take the people's money and buy your corporate debt. And that's what the European Central Bank did. Now, mentioning the European Central Bank, the Japanese, we're going to take a trip around the world, as you asked. Take a look at the last quarter of Japan's GDP. It declined 2.5% despite negative interest rates and trillions of dollars that the Japanese Central Bank has pumped back into the market to artificially inflate it. Over in Europe, negative interest rates. They started at, we're going to buy $1 trillion worth of corporate and government bonds. They end up buying over $3 trillion worth. Oh, and where's the European GDP going overall? Well, now we're looking at France going negative, Germany going negative, and Italy is in a recession by all numbers. It's not working. This is one of the biggest scams ever created in the history of the world. No, there's nothing in history. You know, people say to me, you know, Salenti, you got it wrong. You said this thing was going to crash back in 2012. And I remember being on your show talking about it and then later saying, no, Gary, this, they're going to keep it going. Because they never taught me about negative and zero interest rate policy and quantitative easing in Economics 101, a graduate school. This is a scam. And all it's doing is enriching the very rich. And to put the numbers into perspective, and I'm sure you've said them before and your audience knows it, but just to put it back into perspective, 8 people, according to Oxfam, have more money than half the world's population combined. And in the United States, we have 3 people, Warren Buffett, Jeff Bezos, and Bill Gates, have more money than half of us combined. All of this is done is only enriched the very rich. And it goes back to listening to you before I got on the air about how Big Pharma owns the government. And they tell them what to do. And that's what they do in every aspect of this government. It's a dictatorship. And when people are voting Democrat or Republican, look at all those people, how everybody's so happy that Nancy Pelosi is back in there. Great. She's only been in Congress since 1987. You know, and what are they worth? Over $100 million, her family now. And it's every one of them, whether it's the Pelosi's or the McConnell's, whether it's the Schumer's or the Graham's. It's one rigged game. And as George Carlin used to say, it's one big club and you're not in it.
All right. Let's now look at a very important issue for a lot of Americans, is jobs. When I look at the official figures of 3.8%, I say that's not possible because we have 96 million Americans who did work full-time, who are not working but could work and want to work. And we also see robotics, artificial intelligence, and visas taking an awful lot of seniority jobs out of the marketplace. So when you're looking at the honest figures of how many people are actually not working, our real unemployment rate is somewhere between 22% to 24%, putting us right up there with some of the basket case economies of the world, like Greece and Spain, etc. So why is it we can't be honest about our true unemployment rate? Why can't we create manufacturing zones that give some preferential treatment to the fact that we want to employ Americans more willing to help? The United States people, I'm sure, would not mind helping to contribute more of our tax dollars to these industrial zones throughout the United States to bring jobs back instead of letting the people on Wall Street, the equity partners, collapse their companies. By the way, talk about equity partners, because I said this 40 years ago. I said it 30, 20, and 10 years ago, that these are economic parasites. They buy very successful companies that frequently have no debt, have been around a long time, and they load them up with debt, take every penny they make as profit for themselves. JCPenney's the latest example of that, and then bankrupt it. And all those people lose everything, including pensions frequently, get nothing, are now unemployed, and hard to get another job. And we don't talk about it. We praise these people in the media. They're the ones you always see on the cover of Fortune and Wall Street Journal instead of being condemned for what they are. Your thoughts?
Take four words, too big to fail. When people complain, America's turning socialist and they're losing capitalism. Capitalism was gone with too big to fail. There's no such thing in capitalism called too big to fail. You rise and fall on your own merits. To answer your question, it's fascism. It's the merger of state and corporate powers. That's the definition Mussolini gave it, and he knew a thing or two about fascism. It's a monopolization. There are no antitrust laws anymore. The Robinson-Patman Act, Sherman Antitrust Act, Clinton Antitrust Act, and of course what Bill Clinton did to the Glass-Steagall Act to give the banksters more power over the government, and of course bringing in the heads of the Goldman Sachs gang to become Treasury Secretaries as they have in the past. So it's a takeover. It's a monopolization. And Americans don't have the will or the power to fight back. Look what's going on over there in Europe with the yellow vests in France. What was it about? The people have no money. They can't make ends meet. You go one country after another. They had the five-star movement league in Italy moving forward. They call it populist movements. They're not populist movements. What the people are, they're poor movements. But in America, there's no fight. So look at this last midterm election. What was it about? There wasn't one talk, not a peep, for example, about the wars that America's deeply entrenched in. Not one mention from any of the candidates. It's a takeover. It's a total monopolization, and the people are nothing more than plantation workers on the multinational plantations of Slavelandia. So until the people stand up and fight back like they're doing in France, they're just going to keep taking over the country.
What do you recommend the people begin to do to have more say-so in our domestic and foreign policies?
I believe that we have to change the whole electoral system. and bring it into the one that they have in Switzerland, a country that has not been in war since World War II, surrounded by war, since 1850s. They've been surrounded by war for centuries, and because the people vote, they have direct democracy. Look at the sham that we just had, again, called the midterm elections, and the clowns recounting votes week after week. What a joke it was. If we could, Gary, if we could transfer, as banks do, trillions of dollars worth of money around the world each day in milliseconds, with blockchain technology, we could have blockchain voting. We should be able to vote. We were talking before, of course, we don't have a lot of time, but, you know, about the stock markets. Trump gave that tax break to the big corporations, of which 82%, according to the Tax Policy Center, went to the 1%. What did they do with the money? Oh, we're talking about Apple before? Apple bought back, by this year, they're going to be buying back $100 billion worth of stock that they repatriated from tax breaks and bringing money in overseas. They're not creating jobs with it. So what happens? We, the people, should have been able to vote on that because they just threw us pennies like they always do. You want to go to war? Let the people vote. We need a new system. We do not have a representative form of government. Anybody that thinks that what they call campaign contributions are contributions, they better grow up. They're called bribes and payoffs. So to me, the only solution is a new way. The old system doesn't work. And I'm in favor of direct democracy and blockchain democracy with blockchain voting.
Gerald, we look forward to another conversation this year. Thank you very much. We appreciate you being on.
And thank you, and thank you for all that you do.
Gerald Salante, and Gerald can be reached through his website at trendsresearch.com. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.